You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and today our topic is one every mayor and economic development specialist and even citizens across our entire region should have intense interest in. That's expanding our country's tech base to the heartland. It may come as a surprise that my guest is not from our area, but the capital of our tech economy in Silicon Valley. He's Congressman Ro Khanna, whose recent book called Dignity in a Digital Age, Making Tech Work for All of Us, is an urgent call to level the tech playing field that not only has economic ramifications, but also for the deep divisions that plague our country. He's going to talk about that today. Congressman, welcome, and thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. It's really an honor to be on.
It's rare, honestly, that somebody gets it the way you do, especially somebody from the coast. And what really stoked your interest in this topic and caused you to write about it? A very, very good book, by the way.
I was born in Philadelphia and grew up in Pennsylvania, so I have roots, at least, in a non-coastal state. But I saw what was happening in my district, $11 trillion of market cap, all this wealth piled up in my area. And young people in my district, if you poll them, are very optimistic about their future. But then as you go to different communities across the Midwest and the South, rural communities, black communities, Latino communities, you see manufacturing having left. You see jobs having been offshore. People are being told to move, and no one wants to move. They don't want to ticket out of the communities that they grew up in and loved. I mean, some people, if they want to move, fine, great. But you can't be forced to have to move to get a job. And I said, how is this fair? How are we not giving opportunities for modern wealth generation in the 21st century across America, the communities that have been totally left out of this economy? And these aren't coding jobs, by the way. These aren't jobs for Google or Facebook. These are often manufacturing jobs. They're retail jobs. They're jobs in healthcare. And it just seems that they've been concentrated. So many of these 25 million jobs in a few metropolitan cities, and that's because of a failure of policy. So we have to get these job opportunities to people across the country.
I remember, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners do, the competition for the Amazon headquarter facilities a couple of years ago, and it was disheartening that all these communities putting up so much big money, and they wound up going again to the coast for the most part. But how can we go about, what are some practical ways that our region can start taking more better advantage of the tech economy?
Well, first, we need incentives. I would say that we ought to provide a tax incentive or even an incentive if you want a government contract, that you need to hire people in rural communities, in smaller cities. And this will encourage companies to invest in the talent that exists across America. Second, and this is something that the president has championed, the COMPETES Act, and I helped co-author it with Senator Schumer and Republican Todd Young and Republican Mike Gallagher, is let's have a massive investment in technology, but not have those jobs just located in the coast. Create these tech centers and hubs across America. Intel investing in Ohio is a great example. Have that be in Columbus, where you can have semiconductor manufacturing. Have robotics manufacturing in places like Youngstown. Create these hubs across the country. And then invest in our land-grant universities and our smaller colleges, not just, by the way, for a four-year degree or a two-year degree, but to get a credential that's actually going to lead to a job. I think one of the frustrating things is we kept telling people, go get trained, go get these new skills, and they'd often do it, it would cost them money, and there'd be no job at the end of it. What we actually need is a collaboration with the private sector that gets people credentials and gets them into these high-paying jobs.
It's interesting you've mentioned two of the things that people are always told when in response to globalization and automation, either move from where your family is or your parents, grandparents, kids, or go get a college degree. And what I find interesting and what I like about this is it's not necessarily the case with either one, although certainly college degrees are involved, but you don't have to have one.
You don't. I mean, look, telling people to move is just offensive. I mean, I ask people in my constituency in Silicon Valley and Fremont or nearby in Palo Alto, how many of folks want to move? How many of folks want to move to Kentucky or to West Virginia? And very few hands go up. And then I say, why do you think they want to move here? People love it. I've been to Appalachia. They love it there. They love the beauty of the place, the work ethic. There's a deep pride. And I think it's offensive to tell folks, well, you got to go move. And it's very hard for people to move, by the way, because of the cost of living, because people want to stay next to their families to raise kids, because people have pride in their tradition. Look, I moved. My parents moved from India as immigrants, and I moved from Pennsylvania to Silicon Valley. Moving for some folks is great, and that's part of the American ethos of ambition. But here's the bottom line. No one should be forced to move just to have a good job. And we should understand that you can't have communities just dwindle and think that that's okay. And so the point is place matters, and we've got to create wealth generation opportunities in places across America. And we can't be callous in telling people, just go get trained. First of all, a lot of those training programs were totally ineffective. And then what are you doing when you're asking someone in their 30s or 40s or 50s to go get trained? What are they supposed to do? Stop the job that they have to feed their families? And how are they supposed to afford the training in the first place? So what we need is actually not just saying a four-year degree, but if we're going to ask for credentialing, make sure there's a job at the end of it. Make sure you're paying people in that apprenticeship. And it turns out a lot of these programs you can do in 6 months, 9 months. You can pay folks for it, and you can get a good-paying job. And these jobs are not these coding jobs. I think that's another big myth that, oh, you got to go code for Google. No. You can be in manufacturing. You can be in retail. These are jobs that people have great skills in and that their parents have done. They're just a modern version of the same job.
You have a term in your book, again, it's called Dignity in a Digital Age, Making Tech Work for All of Us. Excuse me. You have a term called democratic capitalism, which kind of takes a broader view of what you're talking about. Can you define that and share that with our listeners?
I am a big believer in our free enterprise system. I think it is terrific that people can start businesses, whether they're big businesses or small businesses. I love the fact that we have entrepreneurs that can solve big problems and have technology solutions. But I don't think it should be capitalism that is just totally unconstrained. I mean, when you just have capitalism and you have capital flight wherever it needs to go in the world and you don't think about community and you don't think about place, that's a problem. That's been the problem over the last 40 years. We just sat there and said, okay, consumers are benefiting cheaper prices. Who cares if the jobs go to China? Who cares if the jobs go offshore? You know, who cares? The people who were in these communities that had those communities destroyed. And they don't want just a handout. You know, you can't say to someone who has so much pride in having built wealth, in having helped to build America, that, you know, all the wealth is now going to be generated elsewhere and we're going to send you a check. That's offensive. What we need to make sure is that we have a capitalism that works, that takes into account the talent and importance of community. So first, we need place-based intervention of the government in capitalism that creates industry, that creates job opportunities in communities across America. And we can't just let the free market say, oh, let the jobs and opportunities just go to the coast or go offshore. And second, we need to make sure people have the opportunity to participate in the market, have the basic health care, have the basic education, come from a family which has a living wage. I don't think this is too much to ask, Robin. I mean, we've got $11 trillion of market cap in my district. We're making more wealth in America than we ever have before, more billionaires than ever before. You're telling me in that kind of an economy we can't find good jobs for every American who wants one, that we can't find the opportunity to have health care and education for hardworking Americans? There's an unfairness, and I think that's what's led to so much anger in the political system.
Well, your book describes the problem, but what I like about it is you offer solutions, and And again, you talk about these issues, I will say, better than a lot of folks from our region do, and seem to really get it. But you call it the 21st century jobs agenda. A couple of these ideas, I advise folks to go buy the book to get all the Congressman Khanna's ideas, but a couple of them stand out. You talk a lot about public-private partnerships, but one idea here is an American Center of Technology in every state. What would those do, and how would that work?
I appreciate that, and I'd love people's feedback on the ideas, and I certainly don't have all the answers. I just wanted to start a dialogue about how do we actually start creating some of these good, high-paying jobs in places that haven't had them. But why can't we create a partnership between a university, between colleges, between a local community to have a leadership in a new technology area? Columbus, Ohio is a perfect example of that. They have Ohio State there. They have a Republican governor, actually, Governor DeWine, who, I don't agree with everything, but I think he's done a very good job in attracting Intel. And you have the federal government with the CHIPS Act, which is what we're hoping to pass in the next few days, saying we're going to put billions of dollars in semiconductor manufacturing. That grant is going to go to Intel, and they're going to create 7,000 manufacturing jobs there, 3,000 construction jobs. Jobs in creating the new semiconductors of our time, and that's going to help with the auto industry. So these jobs, these centers need to be in every state. People say, well, what about, are you just saying that you want technology jobs? Here's what I say. Look, a modern-day automobile is a computer on wheels. UAW guys, they'll tell you that. They understand this better than anyone. And my point is, you don't want all the tech being done in Silicon Valley. Why can't those jobs be in Michigan that are dealing with the technology of making automobiles? So create these centers in every state to create the economy. Now, that doesn't mean that everyone has to be in manufacturing or everyone has to be in technology. But here's what happens. When you have those jobs, then it creates wealth, and that creates the opportunity for restaurants and businesses and a vibrant downtown and for a whole set of new jobs in an area. And I think that is the type of flourishing that communities seek.
Some of the other ideas are digital grant colleges, American Digital Core. I think a lot of these ideas are some fresh thinking on how to approach tech and jobs in our society. I'll point out, I want to ask one more question just for you to maybe talk a little bit more. You've mentioned this COMPETE Act a couple times, and I think it's one of the best ideas to come out of Congress. It's bipartisan. What's been the holdup? I mean, is this going to pass pretty soon? And I guess share some of the other details so folks would have an idea and maybe lobby their members of Congress to get this through.
We are very close. We have passed it in the House. We've passed it in the Senate. Now we just have to reconcile it so we can get the Republican senators and the House, not lose the House members. And I'm working with Senator Schumer and Representative Gallagher and Young to get it done. If it passes and gets to the president's desk, there's nothing I would be prouder of in my 5 years in Congress than getting this passed. This is going to help bring semiconductor manufacturing back to the United States. This is going to make sure that we lead in AI, not China, that we lead in clean technology, not China, that we lead in synthetic biology, not China, that we lead in quantum computing, not China. And it's going to make America a nation of producers again. We've got to produce things in this country and produce things in the new industries. Now, it's just a start. We've got to do a lot more. But you know what I think can excite this country, can inspire this country, can bring this country together, is if we have a president and a Congress that say, we are going to mobilize the nation to produce things again, to lead in production. We're going to get businesses, colleges, public universities all working to produce the next generation of industry and have people in good paying jobs. That's a bipartisan message. I think it can unify this country. And the president is taking a big step in that with getting COMPETE through. And I expect he will have it on his desk in the next month or two.
That's good news. You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. I'm your host, Robin Johnson. My guest today is Congressman Ro Khanna, who's a Democratic congressman from California, specifically Silicon Valley. He's in his third term, and he previously served in the Obama administration in the Commerce Department. We've been talking a little bit about his book, Dignity in a Digital Age, Making Tech Work for All of Us. Also, I will share with our listeners that Congressman Khanna is going to be at Monmouth College, which is where listeners know I teach part-time. He'll be speaking next Friday in an event at April 8th at Dahl Chapel at noon. The public's invited, and it's free. So if you're interested and want to come to campus, it would be a great opportunity to hear Congressman Khanna. This isn't the only place you've been to. You'll be coming to Illinois. You've been to Iowa. You've been to Kentucky, Ohio. Is this part of just kind of fact-finding, going out, finding out what's going on here to help you understand this better, to help develop these ideas?
Fact-finding and actually seeing how we can partner to make jobs and pilot projects that are a proof of concept. I mean, I think people are sick of having politicians go out and say, well, we're going to help create new jobs in the community, and then nothing happens. And I think that's why they're skeptical even of legislation. But if you can go into a community and say, look, there are 20 jobs that we've created, and it's happened because Zoom has partnered with this historically black college or with this community college like Des Moines Community College, and here is the actual job creation, and here are people in the community who are benefiting, then I think it's much more believable. And then you can say we need legislation to scale that. So I've gone partly to try to create these pilot projects that have a proof of concept, partly to listen and understand. And partly initially I was invited to come by Hal Rogers, a Republican in Kentucky. And I said, you know, do they really want this Indian American guy from the Bay Area talking about technology? Turns out Hal Rogers calls that area Silicon Holler. And you know what? People in Paintsville, Kentucky understand the changing economy as well as anyone. And it's condescending to think that they don't get what's happening in the economy. It used to be colleagues said, well, you can't go talk about tech in rural communities. And I said, that's insulting to people in those communities. They know what's happening. They know they want to have their kids have access to the jobs that are high paying. 25 million digital jobs in this country by 2025. They pay $80,000 on average. And you're telling me that only kids in my district in New York or Miami should have access to those jobs? Give me a break. Kids anywhere should have access to those jobs. And that's what we need for our country to compete with a billion people in China. So I started to realize that folks want to know the truth, and they get it. They get the economy is changing. They're open to having new opportunities. What they're not open to is the status quo, which has had the wealth pile up in my district, the job opportunities pile up in my district, and then being lectured that they need to either move or get trained without the opportunity.
It's interesting. You wrote a previous book in 2012 called Entrepreneurial Nation, Why Manufacturing is Still Key to America's Future. And that's music to the ears of a lot of folks in this region, which has suffered the loss of a lot of manufacturing jobs. And people understand that manufacturing is different than it used to be, more automated and all. But it still has a big role in our economy. Was this? Do you see the forces of kind of moving towards more U.S.-based manufacturing, especially as after COVID? And of course, we've got the Ukraine-Russia war, where we're just looking at, you know, bringing stuff back home more to produce. You saw this coming, I think, before a lot of other folks, but in a lot of other events that happened. But do you see kind of a resurgence here of manufacturing in our country?
I do. I think it is critical for our supply chains. I mean, let's look at inflation. Why are people paying more for their cars, and why are they paying more for used cars? It's because we have a semiconductor shortage. Why do we have a semiconductor shortage? It's because we're getting a lot of these semiconductors from Taiwan and Korea. Now, here is, I think, Robin, the mistake that we made as policymakers. We invented the semiconductor chip. We said, okay, we invented it here, great. We don't really care where the production happens. But it's the production that makes a country a superpower. We didn't invent the automobile. We didn't invent the jet engine. We figured out how to do the mass production. And now we're saying that the mass production of the new technology can be in Taiwan or South Korea. That is terrible economic policy. And I think people are waking up to that. They're saying, no, we want to do the mass production in America. We want to do the innovation and production in America. We're going to do that for semiconductors. We're going to do that for electronics manufacturing. We're going to do that for robotics. We're going to do that for synthetic biology, which is taking material in the earth and actually making things out of it, making drugs out of it, making products out of it. We want that to happen in the United States. And even if it's only 10% of employment, these are good-paying jobs. They have a multiplier effect. They sustain communities, and they make us more secure as a country. So I definitely think that we have greater sense of understanding that we need to do that. And I'm doing a bill with Senator Rubio, of all people, which is calling for government investment in manufacturing. They used to call that industrial policy. Well, I'm for having the government support industrialization in America.
Well, I think the resurgence of manufacturing, I think, is something we all are pleased to hear. How do you view the balance we have to have in wanting to do more manufacturing here and keeping jobs here, but also, you know, the globalization's a fact. We can't close our borders up to trade, but how do we kind of balance that out where we stay engaged in the world with trade, but we also try to build up key industries here without running afoul of our existing trade agreements?
Well, it's a balance, but I think we can do a lot more when it comes to prioritizing production in the United States and saying that the government needs to be a partner in some of these cases to help get capital. Here's an idea we have, and this is the Rubio in my bill. We say, look, the government should be providing capital if you're going to start a factory in the United States or if you're going to have an investment in the United States that's going to create jobs. So look at Lordstown, Ohio. The plant, the auto plant closed there because it wasn't profitable for GM to make automobiles. People wanted SUVs. Now, what if we say the federal government will be a partner to GM, will help either do purchase agreements or will help finance it if you reopen the plant in Lordstown, Ohio, and you create jobs? In the past, people say, oh, you can't do that. That's the government interfering in the free market. Just let those jobs go wherever. I disagree with that. I think in a world where China is so heavily subsidizing their industry and taking over some of these companies, I don't think we should do the China model. But I think our government has to be a partner when you have a company that is actually opening up factories and creating jobs. And you do that, and then you still compete in the global economy. You don't lie to people. Like, you can't bring the entire supply chain into the United States. That's unrealistic. But you can make investments so that critical things are being done in the United States.
Your book pointed out the enormous venture capital disparity, and I want you to share some of that with our listeners. And do you see this proposed legislation and your philosophy generally of some more government involvement kind of addressing the shortfall we have in venture capital?
Well, it's really shocking to me that almost all the venture capital goes to three states, California, Massachusetts, New York. Now, there's genius and talent in every state in this country. You know, Illinois produced Lincoln. I mean, and they produced great entrepreneurs. So you're telling me that all of the great entrepreneurs and business leaders are just in three states? Obviously, we know that's not true. Intuitively, we know that's not true. And so we're losing all of this talent. And they're not having the shot at having their dreams. They're not being able to build wealth. You have all the wealth being piled up in my district, and we're not being able to compete effectively against China because we're not seeding all of the talent. And so what I've said is we've got to figure out how do we disperse more of this venture capital, how do we incentivize more investment across the country. Some of that is happening. Some of that is happening because of COVID. I think people have realized, wow, you don't all have to come to Sand Hill Road or you don't all have to go to New York. You can have talent stay in their communities and still be very successful. So we're now swimming downstream, and we can have further incentive to get that venture capital into every community.
I'll have you talk a little bit here, too, about obviously everybody's aware of the urban-rural divide, politically, economically, culturally. A lot of your ideas have the added benefit, perhaps, of moving beyond just economics to address the urban-rural divide.
Well, I think that what this does is it gets people working together with joint prosperity. And if there's anything that's going to bring us together, it's something like that. I mean, imagine a team that's distributed. I write about Alex Hughes is in Paintsville, Kentucky, and he's working with folks in Chicago and Atlanta to build smart dishwashers and smart refrigerators. That's a team that's all integrated. They're prospering together. You know, it used to be when a manufacturing town did well in this country, a coal town did well, a railroad town did well. It was all interconnected. Now when Silicon Valley does well, does that mean it helps Peoria, Illinois? Does that mean it helps Youngstown, Ohio? No, that's part of the problem. We don't have the connectivity of the economy. If we have these distributed teams, if we're doing things together that are making money, I'm not saying that's going to solve all our issues. Of course not. We have deep polarized views on many, many issues, many cultural issues. But I'll tell you something, it makes it easier if people feel like they're working together and prospering together for there to be some sense of bringing this country together.
We have time for just one more question. We got about a minute, Congressman. This is going to be asking the impossible, but you also talk about an Internet Bill of Rights. Can you kind of give a quick recap of what's in that, the significance of it, in about a minute?
Absolutely. If we're going to expand technology opportunity, we need to respect people's rights. Every individual should have a right to their data. Your data shouldn't be taken from you by a company and then used to manipulate you. But ultimately, Robin, let me end on this note. I am very, very optimistic about this country. We have done great things. I still would much rather be us than China. We just need to make sure that we're taking advantage of all of our talent in all of the regions. And if we have a mission in this country to rebuild the nation, to become a nation of producers, to have technology opportunities, not just for people in Silicon Valley, but for young people and people who want to in their middle age across this country, I think we can have an economic renaissance. I think we will lead the 21st century. And I think we can start to bring this country back together. I see it in Ohio where people are talking about a new patriotism, a new excitement with Intel investing there. We can be doing that in states across America.
The book is called Dignity in a Digital Age, Making Tech Work for All of Us. The author and my guest today has been Congressman Ro Khanna, who's from Silicon Valley, member of Congress. Again, he'll be visiting Monmouth College next Friday, April 8th, at noon at Dahl Chapel. It's a free event and open to the public. If you're interested in hearing more, he'll be there. Congressman, thank you very much for taking the time to be my guest today.
Thank you, Robin, and I'm excited about coming to Monmouth College.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at WVIK.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
You got this, girl.
Love Girls, the podcast, is all about storytelling and empowerment.
Our mission is to share a space for women and girls to talk about the stuff that matters to them most. Love speaks to the support we give each other as we search for our own path to success.
L, we can lead the way.
O,
overcome barriers.
V,
value each other.
E,
and empower each other. That's love.
Because every girl has a story.
And our stories matter.
Hey, this is Matt.
And I'm Joy.
Have you ever wondered what it'd be like to be a high-powered attorney, marketing guru, or entrepreneur?
If you have, we have a podcast just for you, and it's a real piece of work.
Come on, Joy, it's not that bad.
No, Matt, that's the name, A Real Piece of Work. It's the new job podcast for young people from WVIK and Junior Achievement of the Heartland.
Oh, nice.
Join us for A Real Piece of Work and get a jump start on your future.